Good afternoon. Welcome to the Dave Jamison Show here on Edmonton Sports Center, TSN 1260. Tom Gazzola, Matthew Iwanek with you as we continue on this Thursday in Calgary is where I'm coming at you from, covering the Oilers and Flames series. Maddie back home holding things down at TSN 1260 HQ. We highly encourage you to join the conversation as always. Hit us up at the James H. Brown Alberta Injury Lawyers inbox. 101260 is the number. Tag your texts with your names, please and thank you. James H. Brown. When accidents happen, go to jameshbrown.com. Lots of texts coming in still about last night's game. Rightly so. Craziness. 9-6, the Oilers fall in game one. That game was all over the map. Last night on the post-game show, I was trying my best in real time to describe it, but I was just going through everything I could remember being down at the Saddle Dome in the first two periods and going, what the heck is going on here? Absolutely crazy. Edmonton down four goals a couple of times. They rally back to tie it up a minute and a half later in that third period after Yamamoto scores. The Flames go and take back the lead, and it ends up being 9-6. All three goalies in that game. No bueno. Safe to say, we had a good discussion, debate, if you will, between some texters and us in regard to the goaltending situation earlier in the day on the lowdown. And, we're talking about some other elements of the game as we progress through the afternoon. The Oilers holding a media availability that started about 30 minutes ago or so down at the team hotel. What we will do is get that audio and we will play it for you to get you up to speed on what Jay Woodcroft's thinking, what some of the players have to say in regard to game one and how they are getting set for game two. On the Dave Jamison Show on this Thursday, we will hear from Farhan Lalji, who will stop by, TSN Vancouver's very own. We will discuss the CFL, getting the CBA done yesterday. That was good news last night. Our own Dustin Nielsen taking credit for that CBA getting done. Dusty was in Toronto for CFL prep. The amount of influence he had on those negotiations, I'm sure, was extremely minimal, if at all non-existent, but the big man taking credit nonetheless, and good for him. Hey, Maddie, good for Dusty. He got it done.
You want to know something? He's in Toronto, and all of a sudden, the negotiations get figured out.
Weird, right?
It's not a coincidence. Impossible. No, I don't believe in those type of coincidence. We all know Dusty got this done.
Kudos. He got it done.
At the same time, I will say this. Were you worried about it? Because I wasn't. Like,
no.
It was the first strike since the 70s, and I was like, oh, okay, cool, whatever. They weren't missing games. We've seen this time and time again where they get right near training camp and then they figure it out. This one went a couple of days longer. Cool. At least we have to wait 7 years for the next time this will happen, but they weren't missing games. Both sides knew that they couldn't afford it.
I'm glad that the term is 7 years because, I mean, we've had labor negotiations in recent years, and I know COVID, it messed everything up around the world, the sporting world indeed, here in North America. We lost the 2020 CFL season, so they just basically scrambled to get last year in, and now you've got 7 years, and there's some changes to the CBA. Health policies were involved, minimum salaries were involved in the offer and the negotiations, and Farhan will come in to break all of that down. Maddie, no, I wasn't worried about it. It really seemed like, judging by the tone from team executives across the league, the players, especially ones who have been in the league for a while, like an Aaron Grimes from the Elks, you just got this sense like, yes, it's happening, but the finality of it was coming quickly, and it was inevitable. And finally, we saw it get done last night, so that's just good news. And we'll break it all down with Farhan, who obviously is a go-to source in the CFL, and he's also great on his hockey coverage of the Canucks down in Vancouver. Also on the program today, we've got Eric Thomas from Raceline Radio. We'll talk F1, the Spanish Grand Prix, coming off the Miami GP, the first one there, and Max Verstappen pulling off the victory. Like, it was an interesting race a week and a half ago, and Charles Leclerc kind of made a run at the end. We had that yellow flag in the dying laps of the race, Matty. Mm-hmm. But really, it wasn't a photo finish. It wasn't super close at the end. Like, Leclerc had a couple of moments where he challenged Verstappen, and it didn't come to fruition. So after a rough start, a couple of DNFs for Verstappen, I think he's laughing now, man, because every other race he's won that he's been in.
Yeah, isn't it every race he's finished, it's basically been first?
Yeah, or a DNF. It's That's either first or DNF
yeah,
for him
so
this
like
year.
Every race that he actually crosses the finish line, it's been first. So, you know, that's it's going to be interesting to see how this one plays out, because I would say, based on the history of Charles Leclerc of Monaco, he's going to want to get the points and beat Max this weekend before Monaco next week, because he just seems to be cursed at Monaco. Evident this past weekend, there was some historic race and he crashed an iconic car on the final lap out there. Like, things happen to him in Monaco, which is where he's from. But this is going to be an interesting one, because can Ferrari, who got off to such a great start, everything looks really good for them, partly because of the DNFs by Red Bull, can they find the changes necessary to get the wins and get the victories and stay ahead of Max and Red Bull?
To me, and I'll ask Eric about this when he hops on in hour number two of the Dave Jamieson Show, is what the heck is happening to Mercedes right now? So dominant. But this year, non-factor. Right?
They got the car completely wrong.
Wow.
That's what it looks like, at least.
Yeah.
Well, for their standards. Like, they are still third, which
Good
for
point.
A lot of people is great. But for the standards of Mercedes and what people would expect from Mercedes, they failed on figuring out their car for this year and these changes.
F1, Drive to Survive, all of that hoopla. It's fun. So we'll talk to Eric Thomas about that as well. Of course, plenty of Oilers chatter. I see a bunch of texts coming in at the James H. Brown Alberta Injury Lawyers inbox. I've got some holdovers from the lowdown that I kept to the side that we'll read as well. Again, the Oilers holding their media availability down at the team hotel. No practice today. It's the playoffs, and that's just the routine. You know, they go on the ice for morning skate. Now it's optionals. You know, if the big guys want to get in there and just kind of get their feet moving a little bit and get the blood going, they do, like we saw with Nugent Hopkins and McDavid yesterday. But a lot of the players taking the option. Most of the guys on the ice yesterday were the Black Aces and the bottom six guys and the younger guys. Only three defensemen were on the ice. I imagine tomorrow will be similar when we're back down at the Saddle Dome. And then today, probably a couple of team meetings, some video. I don't know how much of yesterday's game you actually look at and say, hey, we did this good. Let's improve on it. Hey, this was a glaring issue. We need to be better. Because that, like, where they were bad, they were awful. And that's in a lot of facets of the game. And where they were good, it was kind of more so how bad was Jacob Markstrom. Do you think that's a fair way to assess it?
Yeah.
I think so.
I believe so. They are speaking right now, by the way. And
okay,
I just want to quickly say, Rashog has this out there that Woodcroft confirmed Smith starting game two. Went
there
out of his way to mention it.
There you go.
So they are going to Mike.
This text says, I texted the other day asking when we can just say that Smith is playing well, and you cited games 1, 4, and 5. You were right, Gazzy. Yeah, those were tough games for Smith. The other games in the series, he was very good to get the win against LA. Like, but 1, 4, and 5, he, you know, 1 and 5 in particular. 4, yeah, you know, he was okay, but like, 1 and 5, not great. And then when he was good, he was excellent. 2 shutouts in the 4 wins that he has this postseason. So, you know, I know people joke about that battler nickname and mentality when it comes to Mike Smith, but he does it. You have to say, when he plays good, he does battle. It's unorthodox at times. It's not really reassuring, some of the ways he makes saves, but he gets it done.
Can I ask you a question?
Yeah, sure.
If the Oilers were to lose game two, and let's just say it's a normal, non-chaotic loss in game two.
Okay.
Nothing like yesterday. Are you worried, like, fully worried? Or, like, because I said yesterday I could see the first 4 games being home teams win. Oilers lose the first 2, win the next 2. It's a 2-2 series. We go to a best of 3. How, where's your level of concern for this team go if they lose tomorrow? Are you still there? I think we lost Tom Gazzola as I was asking him that question. It was such a tough question, we lost Tommy. Yeah, he's gone right now. I'll have to connect with him momentarily here as he's down in the satellite studios of ours, if you will, in Calgary. Oh, Tommy, you there?
I'm here.
Yeah, we lost you there for as I was asking my question.
Yeah, well, I heard it, and then the board cut out at the satellite studios.
It was such
the question. Sorry about that.
Oh, yeah, it was such a tough question that it looked like you were bailing and walking away from this.
No. The board, you know, technical issues, how they pop up. At the worst times, I'm back.
If the Oilers lose tomorrow, where's your level of concern for this team? How worried are you with this team? Or could you see this being a series where home teams take the first few games and we see what happens going into the final three? What's with this question in your board? Okay, well, I guess we lost him one more time when I've asked him that question. So I'll go to some texts, the 10-12-60 quickly here. One text says, not a series till you lose at home, fellas. Operator Rich, boys, not a snowball chance in heck. We beat Sutter if we have to win 4 or 5. Have to get the split. So, ultimately, if the Oilers do lose tomorrow, do you think that the Oilers still have a chance? Where's your level of confidence? Or do you think they could come back home with the crowd of the Edmonton Oilers at Rogers Place helping motivate this team? We'll continue in the inbox, 10-12-60, James H. Brown inbox. But up next, Farhan Lalji of TSN. He will stop by as the Canadian Football League and the CFLPA. They've come together last night on an agreement. We will officially have a season going into 2022, a full season of the Canadian Football League. We'll find out what's new in the Canadian in the CBA. We'll also get to chat about the teams around the league as they get set for training camp outside of the Edmonton and Calgary teams who have already been having a training camp. And we'll hear from the Oilers throughout this show as well as they are having their media avail right now. Tom Gazzola down in Calgary. Hopefully we'll reconnect with him. I am Matthew Wanick. You're tuned into the Dave Jamieson Show on Edmonton Sports Leader TSN 1260.
1220 in Edmonton. Good afternoon. It is the Dave Jamieson Show on TSN 1260. 60. Tom Gazzola coming at you from the satellite studios here in Calgary as we continue our coverage of the Oilers Flames Battle of Alberta series. A tough one last night for the Oilers, losing 9-6. They'll look to bounce back tomorrow. The team spoke at the hotel, and we'll have that audio for you shortly. Plenty of discussion surrounding the Oilers Flames games, of course, naturally, and we'll get to that as we roll on through the afternoon. Apologies for the technological issues. The board just crapped out on me twice in that last segment. Maddie, you thought that maybe you jinxed it.
I'm not asking that question ever again. On air.
Please don't.
Nope, not bringing it up.
My answer was amazing. I was evidently speaking to nobody. Wow. Jay says, I bet you Rashog found out where Tommy is and pulled the cord on his feet as revenge. Yeah, probably. Probably. We're feuding right now. I'm kidding. All good. All good with Shogger and I as we welcome in Farhan Lalji from TSN Vancouver. Shogger and I are fine, Farhan. I know you're curious to know what's going on.
Shogger and I are not. I don't talk
really,
to that guy
friends
anymore.
Off. What
no,
happened?
No. He just covers hockey. He doesn't like football.
Oh, touche. Touche.
Yeah.
This is juicy.
No, I love Shogger.
No,
he's a good man. He's just too busy. He's too busy podcasting. I think my theory is Dave Jamieson is like 99% healthy now, and he's bored. So he's come up with some sort of telepathy thing to make your wiring all wonky so that we're all excited for his return eventually here.
Yes, and it's imminent. JMO's coming back very soon, which is great news, and we're all very excited about that. And if JMO's listening, shout out to JMO. Hope he's doing well and getting ready for his return. Farhan, positivity all around when it comes to the CFL. Good news last night with the CBA getting hammered out. And, reading the articles about it, seeing the reaction, your reaction from it, you call it a very good deal for the players and the league as a whole. Why is that?
Well, I hate looking at these things, especially in the realm of professional sports, as one side's got to win and one side's got to lose. So, from a player perspective, they got a meaningful raise in the salary cap. It was double the raise that they got in the previous salary cap on an annual year-over-year basis. I think that matters coming out of COVID. I think it was important for the players to get that, because when you look at what the cost of living is now and what inflation is, I mean, I think it was the right thing to do. On top of that, they got meaningful health and safety benefits. They've got guaranteed contracts, or a portion of the ability to negotiate a portion of guaranteed contracts, which they didn't have before. The ratio got protected. You know, there are so many things in this that could have been taken away and gone completely differently. For them to be able to do that, the revenue sharing, the additional streams that got added to revenue sharing, all of it, I think it's a meaningful win. The league itself has got some clarity. They've got a seven-year deal. It could get opened up after five when the television deal expires. But, you know, from a player perspective, they're not going to want to open it because there's no new revenues that could potentially come at that point, right?
Right.
So there's so many little things they got, and I think it's important for the league to treat the players that way. They keep talking about a partnership, and in the last couple of weeks leading up to this, it felt like it was just that, talk. And then when you look at the final outcome, I think it's meaningful.
Farhan, when it comes to this finally culminating in a resolution last night, like, listening to the interviews from the players who were on strike and then the management types and the league executives, it never really felt like it wasn't going to happen. Is that a fair way to read the situation? It just seemed like it was inevitable, and this was just the delay to getting it done.
Yeah, to a point, right? I mean, I think the reason it went the way it did is because, you know, the two sides worked together in their interest-based bargaining and all the small stuff. Then they kind of got into a bit of a wall on the heavy stuff, monetary-related, and then the league put forth an offer very late in the game, which is what the players are dubbing the zero offer, which was zero starting Canadians, zero increase to the salary cap. You know, like, just it was zeros across the board. And you know, you couldn't really take that as a serious offer. So by the time they made a serious offer, we're now into the final week of bargaining, right? So when they finally left bargaining and the owners walked away from the table, they actually weren't that far apart. But I do think it was worth striking for, because during that interim, while these guys have been striking for the last 4 days, you know, not only did the Elks and Stamps get an advantage, which is a whole other story, but,
right,
you know, you wound up getting the additional safety benefits. You wound up getting the additional revenue streams on revenue sharing, right? Grey Cup, concessions, parking, things like that. All of those things that they get to tap into. The ability to audit the numbers, right? And to bring in their own auditor so you know they're real numbers are not just kind of being moved around a little bit for a bigger business picture. So
right.
I think to get those things, I think those are meaningful moves, but they needed to go out to get them.
Farhan Lalji joining us now, TSN's very own. We're talking the CFL and the CBA that got done. Camps will resume. Farhan alluded to the Elks and Stamps. They had to give 72-hour strike notice due to Alberta labor law. So they really don't miss a beat. How much of an advantage, just quickly as an aside, Farhan, do the Stamps and Elks have when they were able to actually participate in on-field sessions in training camp, as opposed to the other teams being, quote-unquote, striking and locking them out of their facilities?
I think it matters for early in the season, right? I think there's going to be a noticeable advantage in weeks one and two. Because, you know, when you talk about training camp practices and you talk about five additional days, three of which are padded, those are full days. Like, you could go 12, 14 hours when you add up all the meeting time and the film time and the practice time and all of it. Whereas during the course of a regular season, players are limited to a 4.5-hour work day. They can do more if they want, but the teams can't, you know, be involved in any of what goes on over and above 4.5 hours. So, you know, the amount of prep that can get gleaned during that time or get done during that time, I think is meaningful. Yeah, there's a portion of that which is simply evaluation, which again is evaluation time the other teams don't have, but there's also some install that can occur as well, right? So I do think for a couple of weeks it will be an advantage to those two teams, and that's okay. Like, nobody manufactured this. Nobody can blame anybody, right? Like, it just
right.
happened. It was an unintended consequence. But certainly teams are sour that it is happening and they're going to face those teams, but there's just really nothing that can be done about it. So you just deal with it and move on. And after the first couple of games, I don't think anybody's going to notice.
Fair point. Farhan, with this 7-year deal, you know, it being generally pretty good, well-received, and now we can just get back to business on the field, which is what I think most of us, all of us really want. How good of a situation is this when you consider maybe like the XFL and its return, the new USFL and those leagues potentially taking away talent that might have ultimately ended up in the Canadian Football League. Does this kind of solidify the CFL's position as a go-to league for guys that don't crack an NFL lineup as opposed to going to the XFL or the USFL?
Well, you would hope so, right? I mean, I do think that there's going to be a lure to those American leagues for as long as they last because, you know, they're going to pay a little less than the CFL, but when you factor it out on a per-game basis, it's actually more because those seasons are so much shorter, whereas the CFL season is 20 weeks when you factor in the buys in the playoffs, right? Whereas the these seasons are going to be in and around the 10-week mark, right? So that matters, and it's in your own country, and it's on your own television networks, and it's the game that looks like the game you're comfortable with. But certainly this does add a lot, right? Because, there's the guaranteed contract piece. There's an increase in the minimum salaries. There's additional benefits and health and safety things that those other leagues may not have coming out of the gate, right? So I'm not overly concerned about the USFL. I never have been. Just looking at the quality of play, you can see it's just not the same. And not just the quarterback play. And the fact that it's owned by NBC and Fox is all nice, but at the end of the day, it's a little bit, you watch the games and there's nobody there, and I understand the business model because it's all a single hub city and all that stuff. I just don't think it's sustainable. But with the XFL and The Rock and Danny Garcia and the relationship they have with the NFL, but more importantly now the deal they've got with Disney, and I've said this before, when you get on ESPN, and the NHL is finding this out, because it's not just about money, it's the ability to promote. And I tweeted this out earlier, Gary Bettman on a podcast talking about how ESPN froze them out before and how they're doing a great job for them now. Don't minimize that, because going to ESPN was never about money. It was about getting on SportsCenter. And if you watched the last incarnation of the XFL before COVID and you saw the coverage that that league got on SportsCenter, it mattered. And the athlete, the hosts don't talk about it like it's all new stuff. They talk about it like it's a legitimate entity because they're invested. They're also the play-by-play crews. So even though there's not a lot of dollars going, they are spending money on production, but there's an investment in making that work, and they've got the platform to do it because SportsCenter is relevant to everybody. Even if you don't have cable, you're watching pieces of it on social, right? So that part of it really, really makes a difference. I think it would have for the last league had COVID not hit. And I think it's going to allow this version of the XFL to stick around a bit. So the CFL needed to do this to make their product, and not just the product, but just to make their work situation and how it's perceived to agents and people in the U.S., it had to get better. And it's done that in this deal.
We had a text that came in from JJ, and he said, can you please ask Farhan how things are going to play out with the Lions in BC, with a couple of Canadian QBs and Nathan Rourke more specifically? And Farhan, I know you're entrenched in the game. You coach it, you cover it. This is interesting, watching a couple of Canadian quarterbacks that will be at the helm of a team in the CFL. What's your take on it going into camp when things finally get going again? And how do you think BC will benefit or maybe not having a couple of QBs with that Canadian national flag beside their name?
Well, I think the league benefits. And this is why I do think the ratio is important. While I'm a believer that, an adjustment needed to be made because there isn't the amount of available Canadians that everybody wants to believe, right? Like the people who say, oh, it's better than it's ever been. You're delusional. You're not watching properly because there are, when you use the word available and you see who's in the NFL, when you see who just chooses not to come because of what the salaries are, available, it's not always accurate. So I did think an adjustment needed to be made. However, I'm a proponent of the ratio and starters because those are the people everyone cheers for. I think the entire league cheered for John Cornish when he was a starting Canadian winning the MOP or Andrew Harris or in this case, like Nick Dembski as a receiver in Winnipeg. And, those elite guys, everybody looks at them and pumps their chest a little bit. And if Nathan Rourke can do it as a quarterback for the BC Lions, I think they'll become a lot, right now everyone's second favorite team is Sask, unless you're from Saskatchewan. I think the Lions are going to be right there because everyone is going to cheer for Nathan Rourke when you're not playing your own team. Because it's a good deal if a Canadian quarterback can have success in this league. And I think he's got all the tools, physically and mentally, to do it. He's a great runner. He's got arm talent, but he's also got poise. He's got leadership ability. His preparation level's at the top end. people believe in this kid. And I watched this guy last year, and you could look at his sample size and say, oh, he only played like parts of three games. But I watched him practice with the first unit most of the season while Mike Riley was hurt. He looked great. And I think he's going to be able to carry that into this season. And if he does well, like I said, everyone's going to be cheering for this guy.
TSN's Farhan Lalji with us discussing the CFL. And Farhan, I'm one of those people that my interest is now peaked in the BC Lions. Listen, I respect the heck out of Michael Riley. Loved watching what he was able to do in Edmonton. And I thought he was a warrior and a great proponent of the CFL. But now with these Canadian guys, I will be seeing what kind of success. And I'll be making sure to tune into Lions games even more so. I would always watch. I'm a CFL geek. So admittedly, but now I want to see, like you said, these Canadian guys potentially have success as starting quarterbacks, and Nathan Rourke has that opportunity. I also want to ask
and
you about
And I hope
this.
Trey Ford does in Edmonton soon.
Good point,
yeah,
and that's a good point.
And their fan base will love that even more. A guy that dynamic, you know, the sooner he gets on the field, the better for the Elks brand and the better for the league. Assuming he's good enough, which I believe he is,
right.
But let's give him a real opportunity and let's get him on the field soon.
That's an excellent reminder. And then what I also wanted to ask you is, are we kind of in a new era of the CFL, perhaps? Amar Doman takes over as the owner of the Lions in Vancouver. He seems like a really sharp businessman that has the right interests for the team and the community. We're watching Victor Kui as a president of the Elks, and people are really getting behind what he's bringing to the table. We know that there's new ownership in Montreal and the potential that might have in investing in the Owls and all of that. Of course, the Bombers and the Riders are always going to be the Bombers and the Riders, and there's a lot of love for them in their respective provinces. Ottawa might be able to turn it around as well. Like, do you sense that we're into the next phase potentially of the CFL and these guys at the helm now might be able to help it transition and prosper?
Yeah, I hope so, right? And I think that guys like Mr. Doman and certainly Victor as well, I think they are doing great things in their markets. You know, I love Victor's ability to connect with the market and the importance of him having grown up there and what it means to the people there, because I know that Edmontonians are proud, and he gets that, right? So
yep.
I think it's great. I think we need more voices in high leadership positions, because this league is kind of notorious for the same guys doing the same things the same way all the time. And that needs to change. So, I would hope, we hear things about, the ownership situation in Toronto, the ownership situation in Calgary, and are we going to be able to get a franchise in Halifax? And you hope that if we do, that the ownership group and whoever heads that up can be that same type of innovator and just give people a chance to have a different narrative in and around this league. Because certainly, we need it, and I think the names you mentioned are taking it in the right direction in their markets, and if they can help set a tone for the entire league, I think that's a great thing.
7-year CBA in tow with some new, fresh voices and eyes on the league and involved deeply, so let's see what happens. Let's get back to football. Farhan, thanks for stopping by on short notice today. Really appreciate it, and always great to catch up with you. We'll do it again soon.
All right, make sure the segment of this plays on Rashog's podcast.
Well, he's got our back. You know that, right?
Well, he's got to. I do, and he's got to talk football at some point.
We'll force him to. Thanks a lot, Farhan.
All right, see ya.
That's Farhan Lalji, TSN's very own, out of Vancouver. Very good stuff from him, and he's always dialed in when it comes to CFL and, of course, the Vancouver Canucks and the National Hockey League and NFL coverage. Farhan, huge football guy, great dude all around, and great to have him on the program. We do have Eric Thomas coming up later on from Raceline Radio, and we'll get back to some Oilers discussion as well as some audio. The team not on the ice today, just having a media availability at the hotel, as well as probably going through some meetings and trying to figure out what went wrong. Basically everything last night against the Calgary Flames in Game 1. Plenty more on the way for you here on the Dave Jamieson Show on Edmonton Sports Leader, TSN 1260. Yes, indeed. Coming at you from down the highway on the road again. Tom Gazzola in Calgary alongside Matthew Iwanek here on the Dave Jamieson Show. Good afternoon, Edmonton and Oil Country and those listening abroad. Hope you're doing well from a windy and cool day in Cowtown as we go through what is an interesting day after a 9-6 Oilers loss to Calgary in game one of the second round. And a couple of updates for you, programming notes, all of that good stuff. Canada and Kazakhstan, a game which was delayed from the World Championship in Helsinki because of a fire at the arena, knotted up at one midway through the first period. So Kazakhstan holding its own.
Embarrassing.
Embarrassing, Matthew says.
It's Canada. You're 1-1 with Kazakhstan. Like, we should be like, if Kazakhstan's scoring, it should be when Canada's up like 6-0 or something like that. How's it 1-1?
Lots of time left, Matty, for Kazakhstan to win this one.
All NHLers, most. Like, I would have to look at the full list. But nothing close to an NHLer on the Kazakhstan team. What are they doing? What's Claude Julien doing? Be better.
Maybe they're rattled because there was a fire at the arena this morning or earlier in the day. Yeah. Wow.
NHL lineup versus a lineup that features 8 players that play in Russia, the rest playing in Kazakhstan.
Yikes. Maybe the boys went out for a good one last night in Helsinki. The bars don't close till like 5 there. I've been. It's wild. It's fun. They love their hard rock. Who knows? Well, we'll keep you up to date on that one. PGA Championship also underway right now. Rory McIlroy, 5-under. Shot a 65 today. Tom Hoge is 4-under through 16. And then Will Zalatoris, also 4-under. Shot in 66 for Zalatoris. They are tied at 4-under in second place behind McIlroy and Rory. Rory in a pretty interesting group with Tiger and Spieth. They'll go again tomorrow morning.
Spieth not with a good day. 2-over.
No. A lot of people pick Spieth to win.
Well, his last two tournaments, he finished second at the Byron Nelson this past weekend, and prior to that, he won the tournament in his last time out. He did finish second at Pebble Beach earlier. You're thinking that maybe, you know, you could keep playing that way as you're going into this tournament, but you know, lots of golf left for him. As for Rory, like, he hasn't won a major since I think he was 14. It's been a while.
Yeah,
it would be great to see him win another major.
He's interesting because, first of all, like, a fantastic golfer, but it seems like he's taking on a leadership role within the PGA among the players.
Absolutely.
Speaking out against the LIV golf situation. I think a lot of players, from everything I read, you know, getting behind Rory and him being kind of the guy who's the focal point for the players, as opposed to the guys that wanted to take part in LIV golf tournaments. We're not seeing Phil at the tournament because he's the defending champ. And he wanted the exemption to go play in the LIV golf tournament in early June, which also happens to be at the same time as the RBC Canadian Open. So I know that there was some discussion, like, was that a slap in the face from the players who wanted to go and get the exemption to the LIV golf event in the UK? Was it a slap in the face to Canada, the RBC Canadian Open? And then on top of that, all the stuff with, like, the Greg Norman quote about Jamal Khashoggi, the journalist that was killed by the Saudis. Like, it's devolving. And one of the LIV Golf executives today stepping down. And then on top of that, you had Ricky Fowler saying he'd consider going and playing there a couple of days ago. He said that.
That one's an interesting one because Ricky... Right. Has always defended the PGA. He's always been very involved with the PGA. So clearly he's got his frustrations with the PGA. But also at the same time, when was the last time Ricky was kind of relevant on the golf course?
Man, he's fallen off.
Right? And that's what you're seeing with this LIV Golf is you're seeing a lot of guys who people aren't really, you know, they're not winning a lot. They're not coming close now. And they're going for the payday because they're not getting on the PGA. The thing I saw yesterday that was the big one, though, which I never thought of this, is would LIV Golf look at approaching and trying to get the collegiate golfers to come to them? That's where a lot of these golfers have been coming from. That's where a lot of these guys, they start in the NCAA and then they go to the PGA. Is that where they could maybe gain some ground, is taking some of those up-and-coming golfers before the PGA gets them?
Just throwing a whack of money at them. Because that's all it is. It's a money grab.
It's $25 million purses each tournament.
Monster purse. It's a monster purse. Interesting strategy. Will this LIV Golf experiment fade away? I feel like it's up against it, honestly. And the resolve from the PGA, not allowing guys exemptions or passes to go play in LIV Golf events, that's a stand. Guys like Rory, outspoken against it, other guys as well. But there is a bit of a divide. And you heard a couple months ago, like, some of the biggest names were being lured by LIV Golf. It didn't materialize, though.
Well, and that's because of what, because Phil Mickelson spoke out, and
right. It
just scared everyone away. And the two things that I see out of this, one is that this is going to go to the courts, because the people that are applying for exemptions to go play on this tour, PGA's and the commissioner has come out and said, nope, can't do it, and threatening suspensions or bans and things like that. But there's also then, well, do they have the right to do that? And this is going to go to the courts, and both sides think they're in the right. So we'll see what the courts decide. That said, the Saudis, the one thing that they have that, like, when you look at the XFL, when you look at the Alliance of American Football, you look at those leagues, the thing you have to wonder is, okay, well, how long could they go until they falter and they run out of money? That's not the case with the Saudis. So even if they're not getting those big golfers right away, they can keep this going for a long time because they don't care. They've got the money.
It's interesting. It is. And it's like, it feels like it's trying to tear apart the PGA. And early on, it also feels like there's some success there. But now, whatever momentum LIV Golf had gained in previous weeks, the PGA is slowly taking it back. Fair assessment?
Yeah.
I think so.
Nailed it.
We'll see how it goes. I mean, we'll continue talking about it. Obviously, it's not the WHA and the NHL. This is different on a whole new level, and we'll keep tabs on it. And Greg Norman and LIV Golf doing what it can to thrive, I guess, or even just become a true thing. They haven't even played an event yet. So PGA Championship, though, well underway. Rory leading at -5. A couple of guys on his heels at -4. And we'll keep tabs on that throughout the weekend as well.
Rory will be at the Canadian Open, though.
That's excellent.
He's one of the guys that is committed to the RBC Canadian Open, along with the world number one Scottie Scheffler and Cameron Smith, who's number 4 in the world, and Dustin Johnson, who's number 11 in the world. So they're cooking up a pretty nice field, though, for the Canadian Open. Because the reason... And it's hurt with the pandemic the last couple of years, but the RBC Canadian Open's got a new date that is very favorable. It's the week before the U.S. Open. And people want that tournament before the U.S. Open to get ready to go. So they're going to get, over the years now, they're going to get a lot of good golfers playing in that tournament.
Good. There was a time when it was considered like the fifth major, quote unquote. That was decades ago, but it's good to see you get a little clout back.
Well, it used to become, was it the week after the British Open? I think that's when it moved. And it was just a crusher for the tournament because no one wanted to fly over from the UK to get to the RBC Canadian Open. And we're like, for the week after. You didn't want to be before the major, not after the major. And then I think right after is the WGC the week after too. So like people usually take that week off. Getting this spot on the schedule is great for the Canadian Open. I just wish one day they'd find a way to bring it back out west.
That would be lovely. There's some phenomenal courses. Alberta, BC, Saskatchewan. The audience would be there. There'd be great galleries, honestly.
2011, last time out of Vancouver.
Man, Got to get it back out here.
Yep.
Got to get it back out here. Hopefully soon. Hopefully. Fingers crossed. A couple of texts to get to. We will get to Oilers audio a little bit later on in the show. We do have Eric Thomas from Raceland Radio coming up. We'll talk F1. And of course, people chiming in at the James H. Brown Alberta Injury Lawyers inbox. When accidents happen, jameshbrown.com. Check them out. 10-12-60 if you want to chime in. This one says, why are the guys on 960 in Calgary saying Lucic should be running McDavid more? Well, because that's effective. And Lucic had his way with a lot of Oilers yesterday. And then this texter also follows up. They literally just said they should start more fights because they have more tough guys. These guys are ridiculous over there. Well, they're trying to stir the pot a little bit. And then another one, follow up about our friends at 960, says, Calgary was trash-talking Edmonton. Are you guys in their studio? Please go fight them. Awanek.
I've been talking trash about Calgary, not the
exactly,
the games, but the city all week.
Exactly. No, we're not in their studio.
What could they?
They're a different company.
I don't care what they're saying. Like, there's not a lot that they could really say. There are some things that I'll go, yeah, sure, you're probably right. But in the end, history of sports, better in this city.
True.
Inside the city, beauty. We got the River Valley. What do they got? We've got the rink where the concerts come to. They come to Edmonton for concerts. Like, the best player in the world ever in the National Hockey League called this city home. The best player in the National Hockey League right now calls this city home. Like, what are we doing here? Like, what are we going with? Huh? Donaires in this city, better.
Right.
Where else would we like to go, Calgary? What else are you calling your way? Oh, yeah, I forgot. The mountains. Okay, so leaving Calgary once again, not being in Calgary. The airport goes to so many different locations, better than our airport. Cool. So once again, leaving Calgary, something that is great for the city of Calgary. That's the thing they like to promote. Fantastic. What else do we got? Where else you can come in Calgary? You got the McMahon Stadium, which has...
McMahon's terrible. Awful.
The only thing I'll say is good sight lines. Wherever you're sitting, no bad seating house. Outside of that, complete trash.
Saddle Dome. Sitting on a bench?
How was the Saddle Dome yesterday for you, Tommy?
Cramped, overcrowded.
Absolutely.
Uncomfortable, smelly. Anything else?
I got the Stampede. Cool. Oh, man. Nice. Awesome. So? Festival City here in the city of Edmonton. Folk Fest. You know, we've got Fringe Festival that's, you know, internationally renowned. We've got an amazing food scene. We've got a better music scene. Where else do we want to go here? Bring it, Calgary. Let's go.
There you go. Maddie's stirring it up, getting feisty. I like it. Little response to the chatter here in Calgary. Awanek firing back hard. Throwing some hard balls at them. High and fast, Maddie. Attaboy. Attaboy. Mark says, what's with Nurse? What happened to his physicality? Thank you, Mark. Mark will answer that and more when we return here on the Dave Jamieson Show on Edmonton Sports Theater, TSN 1260.